Thank you so much. I am so honored to be here speaking with all of you. I'll try to impart a little bit of wisdom that I've gained. Most of it's just because I happen to be in the age group we're talking about. So it works out. I have kind of an insider perspective. Usually when I talk to groups about youth involvement, they ask me how I got involved. Obviously something went right in me growing up to get involved in the movement. So they usually ask, how did you become pro-life? I didn't start when I was a kid saying, I'm going to work for a pro-life organization someday. That was not really in my career path. I think I wanted to be a whale trainer or something like that. So they always ask me that question, and I basically answer it by saying I was always pro-life. Like she said, my dad is a pastor. He's at a Lutheran church in Katy, and so it was always kind of just part of how we grew up. I think I heard the word for the first time in junior high, fifth or sixth grade, and I asked on the way home from school, what's abortion, Dad? And he told me, and I was horrified, and immediately knew that this was not a good thing. And then like a good PK, I wrote for my fifth commandment project in seventh grade, I wrote about sins of omission and sins of commission and talked about Planned Parenthood. So I started at a young age, just being exposed to it in my family being willing to talk about it while I was young. When I got to high school, I started learning more. And I really got passionate my senior year. I was in a government class, an AP government class, and the professor was a coach, and I don't think he wanted to be teaching government. He just had to. That's what they gave him that year. And so he thought it would be fun to bring up controversial topics every day and just have the class go at it. So I think it was at least once a week he would bring up abortion. And there was another girl in the class. We were actually standmates and band, got along pretty well. Her name was Laura, and we found out pretty quickly that she was very pro-choice. And she surprised me because she was very educated. She knew what she was talking about. She had facts. She had arguments. And I was just the good PK who said, well, Jesus says so. And I didn't really know a whole lot else. So I started going home and researching and Googling and using the internet, and I think Wikipedia had just come out. And I started learning more and more, and the more and more I learned, the more horrified I was, and the more my opinion was solidified that this was not a good thing. And this was something that I needed to work, do my part to end. I saw pictures for the first time as a senior in high school, and I was actually at school. One of my friends showed me, and I lost it, and I was crying. I actually missed one of my classes because I was so upset. So I just got really passionate really fast. I actually got connected to Lutherans for Life my senior year of high school for the first time. Once again, good PK. I'd heard of them before. Stopped by their booth at different conferences I got dragged to along the years. But I had never really connected with them. I just kind of knew they were there. So I joined Facebook. It was a newfangled thing at the time. There was not very many people on it. And I saw that there was not a cause for Lutherans for Life. I didn't understand why at the time, but now I do. And so I think I emailed Diane and asked her, can I start a Facebook page for Lutherans for Life? And you know, I didn't know better than to go straight to the president of the board, but that's what I did. And she connected me with Karen Frohwine, and from there it was kind of history. And we connected really well, and Karen was an ongoing mentor of mine all through college. I would send her emails and ask her questions, and she would always answer them. So I got to college, and I was really excited to do more. I had been kind of frustrated by the lack of options for me to do anything. I was in a really small town. There was no abortion clinic, anything like that. So I didn't really know what to do. And I got to Texas A&M, and the first week I was approached by 40 Days for Life. And they told me that they protested abortion clinics. And I said, no, thank you. I didn't want to be an activist. I didn't think I was strong enough to be an activist. I didn't want to do that. So I said no. And I just kind of kept looking for ways to get involved. About a couple weeks later, my pastor, I was connected with the LCMS campus ministry there, University Lutheran, and the campus pastor came up to me and said, I know you're excited about life issues. Could you do something for me? And I said, sure, I'll do whatever. And he said, well, we're signed up for a 40 Days for Life block, and I need someone to organize it. Would you be willing to do this? And I said, well, I actually told them no, and I didn't think I wanted to do this. He said, Laura, give it a try. I won't have you coordinate it right now. Just go out, spend an hour on the sidewalk, tell me what it was like. So I went out there, and I don't know how many of you have read the book Unplanned, Abby Johnson's book. In the book Unplanned, which actually takes place at the clinic that I sidewalk counseled at, there was a sidewalk counselor named Elizabeth who really helped Abby, who gave her the flowers. Well, Elizabeth was a sidewalk counselor that was out there the first time I ever went to go pray. And she greeted me with the biggest smile and the biggest hug I think I'd ever had. She asked me how I was. I said I was doing good. And I asked her, and she says, I'm blessed. And that just kind of stuck with me and kind of set the stage for the rest of my pro-life involvement in college. I saw that what they were doing was exciting, that there was tangible results. We had the numbers of babies we had saved. I was out there when babies were saved. I saw the work they were doing, and for the first time, I felt like there was something I could do, that it wasn't just talking, it wasn't just debating, which was not my favorite thing to do, but there was something tangible that I could do to make a difference. So I decided to go into it as a career. I had no idea what that would look like, where I would go, what I would do. And I was talking to someone, and they introduced me to pregnancy centers. And I decided fairly quickly that that's what I wanted to do. I think I could handle working at a pregnancy center. So I went into nonprofit management, got my degree, had an internship all lined up. I was really excited. And my dad gave me a call. And he said, Laura, I was talking to Dr. Gibbs from the seminary. And he said that his wife was on the Lutherans for Life board. And I asked if I could give, or he asked if he could give your name to his wife to get you involved in Lutherans for Life. And I said, sure, okay, whatever. I've talked to them before. Karen's really nice. I'll do that. So Renee gave me a call, and I think our first conversation, we talked for like an hour. It was an immediate connection. We started building a relationship, and she nominated me for the board in the summer of 2011. So I went to my first LFL conference in Dallas. I had to fly from Washington, where my internship was, but I got involved, and immediately the Lutherans for Life family just embraced me. They were willing to help, ask me if there's anything we can do, let me know. I started looking for jobs the next spring. It wasn't going well. There was just not a lot available. It's getting really frustrated. Once again, LFL stepped up. What can we do to help? Do you need an interview? Do you need a connection here? Let me introduce you to this person. And I think as they were encouraging me and trying to find me a job, some of the gears started working. And we had been looking for two part-time positions. And they, at the board meeting in February, they asked me if I would do both. And I think I told Dr. Lamb, I don't know what to say. And he said, say yes. So I did. And I started last June. So it's been about a year and a half now, and it's been the most exciting year and a half of my life. I've been coast to coast three or four times and gotten to meet so many amazing people around the country who are doing incredible work, and getting to meet a lot of youth who are doing incredible work, who are excited about life, who are excited about making a difference. And they've taught me a lot on how to engage them. So when I look back at my story and how I got to this point, there's three takeaways to kind of apply to how to engage youth in a broader sense in the bigger picture. The first, let's see if we can get this to work. No, it's not working. It was working. Sorry, technical difficulties. Does someone want to be my PowerPoint person and press the arrow? It was working. Maybe it needs that other battery. There's just an arrow, or not that. If you just press this when I point to you, it'll be great. Okay, press it again. Relational, one more time. Active, and one more. Intentional. Those are the three things that I, looking at my story, and the things that really made an impact on me in getting me involved, is that people were relational with me. They gave me something to do, and they were intentional about what they were doing and why they were doing it. So we'll start with relational. If you want to click it one more time. Okay. So a lot of times when people are looking for jobs or that kind of networking, they always say it's not what you know, it's who you know. And I think with youth ministry, it's a little bit of both. It's really important to know the facts, to have all the information, all that education, but I think it's even more important to be willing to build those relationships. Personally invite people. In my journey, every step of the way was marked by a relationship. It was my relationship with my friend who was pro-choice that encouraged me to get involved. It was my relationship with Karen who was there to support me as I was trying to do something I had no idea what I was doing. It was my relationship with the people, with Elizabeth, the sidewalk counselor, my pastor who encouraged me, even though I was very reluctant to get involved. It was my relationship with Renee Gibbs, my dad who made the connection, and then Renee, who was my mentor the last 3 years, has been there for me. So it was all these relationships, and I would never have gotten involved if someone hadn't invited me, someone hadn't encouraged me, someone hadn't have taken a chance on me. Lutherans for Life took a big chance on me when they hired me, when they put me on their board. It was my first job. I didn't know what I was doing. I had to move away from home. And they took a huge chance, and I'll forever be grateful for that. I would not have gotten involved if it weren't for them. I've seen this in Wife for Life just in the last year with our programs, that it's that personal invitation. We had a servant event in April in the St. Louis area, and we had 6 students attend, and each of those 6 students were personally invited. I sent out, I don't know how many emails, advertised on our website, on our Facebook page. No one signed up that way. It wasn't until I went to youth groups and talked to students. Renee went to her youth group and talked to students, and they were personally asked, please come to this. I think you would love this. I think you would really benefit from this. That's when they came. So it wasn't a huge group, but we were able to grow together, really build that relationship. And sometimes people would look at that and say, oh, well, you don't have enough numbers. You should have had a bigger group. If you had done it this way, you would have had more people. But even being small, that was a way to build that network. And these students are still friends, and they still talk to each other, and we interact on Twitter all the time. So it's that personal invitation. Mentorship is also really important. Like I said, Renee was my mentor. Anytime I had a question, I could go to her. I still go to her all the time. She has this experience and this knowledge that I don't have, that I haven't been able to go through. And I think each one of you in this room also has that knowledge that they could impart to a younger student on a one-on-one basis. So if you see a student who seems even remotely interested in what you're talking about, invite them. Invite them to lunch even. Just say, hey, you want to go grab coffee or want to get to know, I'd love to talk to you, see what you're interested in. Building that relationship, even if it doesn't start with a pro-life activity, can really be beneficial so that they understand that you care about them too. And like I said, it's might not be all the numbers, but it's the quality that matters, not just the quantity. The last thing, seek them out. That was kind of what I said about going to the youth groups. A lot of times I think people get this idea, or even I get this idea, that if we have the best event planned, the most engaging activities, something exciting, a good advertising video, that they're just going to come. But that's not always the case. Sometimes you have to go to them. So if you're in an LFL chapter or a life team, do the youth meal one Wednesday night if they do a youth night together. Sponsor their meal. Come in. Say, can I have 5 minutes to talk about what Lutherans for Life does? But reach them, reach out to them, supporting them in what they're already doing to start building those relationships. And then slowly you can introduce them to what you're doing. You want to click it again. Active. This is the biggest one, I think, that I'm going to talk about. Students are inspired by action more than they are inspired to act. This is what I've seen overwhelmingly, that we can talk until we're blue in the face, but this generation in particular wants to know what you're going to do about it. They're tired of hearing people talking. They want to see the action. And so I could do 100 presentations, but it's not until that service project that the student really starts to understand what we're doing. I was inspired to get involved because of action. I expressed that I had been really frustrated by not being able to do anything, and debating wasn't cutting it. Obviously, I was not getting through to Laura. She wasn't going to change her mind, so I felt like I was just going in circles, and it was great to have a Facebook cause and tell the world that I was pro-life, but what was I actually doing about it, other than just making a stand? So I was really frustrated. And for the first time, 40 Days for Life gave me that chance to get involved. And then when I got involved with Lutherans for Life, I was open to a whole new world of getting involved, really making an impact in the church, using the gospel in a way I hadn't used it before. There's so much you can do. And I don't think a lot of students understand that. They don't necessarily know what there is for them to do. Or they think, oh, I have to be really, really smart or really, really, you know, much older or educated in order to be able to do this. But there's so much that they can do at their level anytime. I was part of LJML when I was in college. I was actually the president of a society at our campus ministry. And I saw this firsthand. How students were more interested in service rather than talking. I tried four different meeting times, different times of day, different days of the week, meeting once a month, meeting twice a month, meeting once a semester. We tried everything to try to get people to come to meetings. And I think the most I ever had at a meeting was six. And that was awesome. Usually it was like three, and it was my friends that I dragged to come and said, you're coming to this meeting because I planned it and you're coming. But when we would advertise a servant event or service project to the church, we would have 25, 30 people, which for a campus ministry where you worship about 70, 80 a Sunday, it's a really good number. We would do things like Bible marking for prison ministry, or we'd do decorate stockings for the local group home. There was a boys' ranch near the campus. And people would get really excited and really creative about serving and helping. But then I would have a meeting a month later and no one would show up. So I stopped having meetings. I would email and say, hey, I need help with this project. And I would get a couple people and we would meet once to kind of plan out the project and that would be it. And we just had service projects a couple times a semester. And that changed the way we did things. I mean, it really helped get more and more people involved because they didn't feel like they just had to sit and talk about things. It was actually something that they could do. And I think that model works for engaging students. It's connecting through that action first, and then the leadership roles and that more membership idea traditionally we think of will come later, and if it even comes at all. But the students will be engaged, and they'll be excited, and they'll be ready to do something different, do something wherever they go, wherever they're sent. I'm going to click again. So what are some of the things, I have a bunch of examples, because I get really excited about service projects with kids. So what are some of the things that you can do? We have a senior center, shut-in ministry ideas that we can do. Christmas caroling. We always had a huge turnout when we do Christmas caroling. Sometimes we'd have 50 people that would show up and we would cram in this little room at the local senior center to do Christmas caroling. Really easy, not a whole lot of planning that goes into it, but a really great way to get people engaged. This is a picture from our servant event, and we played bingo for an hour and a half. It does not take any great skill for a high schooler to help someone play bingo. And they loved it. They loved having that student there to help them, to talk with them, share their stories with. And when I was in confirmation, part of our confirmation program was we had to do a certain amount of community service every year. And one of the things we did was an adopt-a-grandparent program. And we would go to the local senior center, and we would be assigned to a resident there, and we'd spend an hour with them once a month. It was not difficult, but we would share stories. Sometimes with the ladies who couldn't quite reach their nails to paint anymore, we would paint their fingernails, play checkers, games, things like that. And it was a really great way. My the lady I worked with, Miss McMahon, she would give me little gifts and write little notes to me. And we had a great relationship. And it was a great way to kind of connect with that other generation and show them that we care about them and that, you know, God cares about them. I'm going to click one more time. There's a lot of stuff you can do with the beginning of life. This is a picture from the Concordia, Nebraska group. You saw them singing about pigs this morning. They did a community baby shower, which is where you stand outside of a Walmart or a Target or something like that, and you have needs lists, so sheets of paper with a list of needs. As people go in to do their everyday shopping, you say, hey, we're collecting items to donate to a local pregnancy center. Would you consider buying something off of this list and leaving it with us as you leave? And people respond to that because they don't have to make a special trip. They don't have to remember, oh, I have to go buy diapers today and then bring it back to church. It's really easy. They can just go in and come out, do what they're doing. And this picture doesn't show it, but they had two carloads full of stuff. And this is in Seward, which is not a very big town. They were able to collect two carloads. They brought it back to the pregnancy center in Lincoln, and the director there literally wept when she saw what these students had brought to her. And it didn't take a whole lot of effort, just sitting outside with a sheet of paper and asking for donations. Prayer vigils, going out to the sidewalk, that's how I got involved. That's a great way to get people involved, kids to see the reality and to see how we can affect that reality and change that reality just by being a prayerful presence. The last one is baby bottle fundraisers. A lot of pregnancy centers do this. But there's a great way to adapt it for students, especially schools, something called Penny Wars, where each class or teacher will have a jar, and if you put pennies in, it's positive points, and anything else is negative points. And the goal is to have the most points. So students will put pennies in their own jar and big bills in their friend's jar, and the winner, whichever class wins, wins a pizza party or ice cream or whatever you want to do. So I've heard of churches doing this with Sunday school programs. We did this at A&M at the campus ministry for the different grade levels, freshman, sophomore, junior, and made a significant amount of money because it's competition and kids get excited and pennies add up. And so then if you take that money and you donate it to a pregnancy center, you can really have an impact on what they do. So that's another option. I have a few more. Sorry, I have lots of ideas. other activities, teens talk to teens. This is something that I'm relatively new to the idea, but something that the Lutheran High School in St. Charles has been doing for a long time. They have a Teens for Life group there, and every year they invite the junior high students to their school, and they have a great time to just share their experiences and answer questions with the junior high students about life issues and dating issues and what high school is going to be like, and just really engage in conversation with them. And it's meaningful because it's peer-to-peer. It's not teacher talking down to students. It's student talking to student with just a little bit more information, since they're high schoolers. They're not quite out yet, but they can really impart a lot of information, once again, start building those relationships. Parents' night out. So in affirming that the beauty of family and marriage and children and what that looks like, by affirming that in your congregation, by having a parents' night out and having the youth do the babysitting and helping with the childcare so that the parents in the congregation can have a night out. It doesn't necessarily seem like it connects to the life issues, but one of the problems, like they were talking about last night, that we're facing is not affirming the family and what the impact a family has on our society. So by affirming that, we're affecting those life issues. I also included buddy walks and 5K opportunities. More and more students, young people are getting involved in 5Ks. 5Ks have just kind of exploded in the last few years. They've become a really big thing. And most Down syndrome organizations will have something called a buddy walk, a 5K. And it's a great way for students to understand these special people in our lives and how wonderful they are and how they contribute to society and how they're just as precious in God's eyes by doing a buddy walk. So that's something you could do, maybe have a team together and do all the fundraising together, do lots of activities, once again, building relationships, but also educating them and getting them to connect with the broader community in a way that they're already excited about. People already want to do these 5Ks. They already want to do half marathons and things like that. But connecting it to a charity that's life-affirming is also a great idea. So I have a video to share with you today. This is a video from our servant event in April. It has some pictures and videos from the events that we did and some of the activities you did. So you can kind of see how the kids responded and how it was meaningful to them to actually get out and do something. So I'll play it and then you can watch that.
This weekend has been one of the most inspirational weekends that I have ever experienced. I am so glad that I got to spend this time with these people, because at first I was very afraid because I didn't know anybody, but getting to know them and getting to understand what they believe in and everything that they stand for. I really want to further myself with them, and I want to make sure that this is what I want to dedicate my life to, helping people and helping women that think that they don't have any other options. And I really think that this is amazing what people are doing. How is this weekend going to change what you do now?
I'm starting to really consider doing something in pro-life movement, just because if no one else is going to go out there and do it, I really want to.
So I'll share a little bit about some of the things you saw in this video. First of all, the student you saw at the very beginning, she was actually new to Christianity. She had actually only been going to church for a couple months when she was invited to attend the servant event. And when I first was planning doing a servant event, came up with this idea, that kind of evangelism was not really on my radar, to encourage a new Christian or someone who was still deciding whether or not she wanted to be a Christian. But obviously, God has bigger plans for things than I do, and that really impacted her. We still have conversations. We were texting the other day, and she's really excited about serving people and getting involved, and I think she's actually gone out and done a couple things since then. So that was really encouraging for me to see how something as simple as a weekend learning and growing and serving can change someone's life in that way. The other student whose interview you saw is Kathy. She has gone to DC with me twice now. She'll be going again next year. She was one of our peer reviewers for our online training course. She's been getting involved more and more, and I've really had a chance to develop a relationship with her, and I'm really excited to see what God's going to do in her life as well. Some of the things you saw in the video, we were putting together pregnancy information packets. So they're the packets that Thrive, the pregnancy center we went to, will give to the women when they receive a positive pregnancy test. It seemed like really menial labor, just stuffing envelopes, but each of the sheets they were putting in these envelopes had information about pregnancy and adoption and abortion and things like that. And so they got to see the information that the women receive, got to see why it's important to give that information to the women, and took hours of time off of that center employee who would have had to spend all that time doing it by herself if we weren't there for her, to free up her time to devote to other activities, things that she really needed to get done. So it seems like they're really simple, maybe not that important, but even for these students, they got to see the impact of the work they were doing when they saw the pregnancy packets in one of the ultrasound rooms and saw that this is what this woman gets when she sees that picture of her baby or finds out she's pregnant for the first time. And instead of getting judgment, instead of getting a death sentence for her child, she gets hope and options and grace. And that's what these students got to give, just in an hour, stuffing envelopes. So really impactful for them, and something that's really easy for us to do. So shameless plug, if you're interested in hosting a servant event in your area, please let me know. We would love to make that happen and really engage your youth in this way. But it doesn't have to be a whole weekend. It can be something really simple. Most of the time I hear people say, well, we're going to invite that student to one of our meetings. And that's great. It's good to invite them to your meetings. Meetings are important. That's where you get to plan things and understand what the purpose and what's going on. But I would encourage, invite them to a service project first. Engage them that way. Do that first. And then the meetings can come later. They can get involved in that later. And they might be more likely to get involved in that later if you start with something like this first. If you want to click for the next slide. So the last thing is intentionality, being intentional in what you do and being intentional in why you are doing it. There's a purpose to what we're doing, and we need to remember that. And also asking that question of why do we want to do this in the first place? What are we trying to accomplish by engaging youth? I love this picture. This was at National Youth Gathering. We had a photo booth contest for free Why for Life t-shirts. And we asked students to write why they were for life on a board and dress up all fun. And we took their picture and posted it on Facebook. And the picture with the most likes, they got to come back and get a free t-shirt the next day. So these are actually two students from my dad's church down in Katy. And it says, why are you for life? Because everyone deserves a chance to live through our Savior Jesus Christ. And I just thought that was awesome that these students would come out with this. Claire, I've known her since she was this tall, and she was actually in the first confirmation class I ever got to talk to. So we go way back. But I was excited about them coming up with that all on their own. I'm going to click to the next slide. So intentional in what you do. What purpose does it serve? I think there's a lot of danger in doing things just for the sake of saying you've done something. Making sure that you're doing something for a specific purpose, that it achieves a goal. I was in a honor student council, a student organization my freshman year at A&M, and I was told this is the body that represents the entire honors community at A&M. We're there to advocate for them, make sure they have the services they need, support them in being this honors community. And I was really excited. I had to go through like three interviews and had to have recommendations written, and I was told this was a great student organization. Well, I found out very quickly that we did a whole lot more to support the student council than we did to support the honors community, and we were just doing things for the sake of doing things, to kind of justify our own existence, to have a budget. We would do activities that didn't really achieve the mission that we were trying or we were supposed to be achieving, and I got really frustrated really quickly. And I complained a lot, and I tried to change things, and it didn't really work. And so at the end of my freshman year, I said, sorry, I'm not wasting my time here. I mean, I was very busy when I did things with them. I worked a lot. I went to a lot of meetings. I did a lot of paperwork, did a lot of organizing, and yet I never felt like we actually achieved anything in supporting the community. And so I think that's a very common frustration. And I don't think anything frustrates a student or an adult more than just being busy for the sake of being busy. So really having a purpose for everything that you do is another way to engage youth. While we're talking about meetings, like I said, meetings are very important, but there's a way to do them that is intentional. So setting an agenda and sticking to it. The life team, there's a wonderful life team at Concordia Seminary. And they do all kinds of things to support the seminary community, to affirm life within the seminary community and the greater St. Louis community. And one of my favorite things about what they do is we get an agenda and we don't deviate, not even a little bit. And if the discussion starts to get a little broad and people start going on tangents, we'll cut it off and say, okay, we'll write that down, something we need to discuss later. We'll set up a group of people to address that concern. But we don't waste time in the meeting talking about things that aren't really getting anything accomplished. I think in all of the meetings I've been to, we've never gone more than 5 or 10 minutes over. Because we're intentional about what we do. And that's really the only way to keep seminary students who have, some of them have families, most of them have jobs, they all have a lot of studying to do. And to give up their time to do something as important as the seminary life team, we value their time. The leadership of that team really values their time and shows them that they value their time and what the sacrifice they're making by honoring it and keeping it intentional and keeping it purposeful. It's also important to connect the activities to the mission. Like I said, don't just do things for the sake of doing things. If you're going to do an activity, make sure it connects to that mission of being gospel-motivated voices for life. That's what we're here for. That's what Lutherans for Life is about. And if you can't figure out why you're doing an activity, if it doesn't somehow connect to the life issues, then maybe we should devote our time to something different. Being purposeful and being intentional about what we're doing is really important when working with students, because it shows them that we respect your time. We respect that you have a lot of options and you have a lot of choices. This is especially true for young adults who, once again, busy schedules. And I know you all, adults, children, youth, all alike, we all have really busy schedules and we have a lot of things. So these don't just apply to getting students involved. It's just good practice to make sure that we're doing the most with the time we're given. If you want to click one more. This is very important, I think, and something I really wanted to talk to you about because I've been coming up, this issue, this conversation has been coming up a lot as I meet with chapters and as I talk to different people who are excited about getting youth involved. The question we need to ask when we're trying to get youth engaged with our chapter or our church or our greater community is, why do you want to get youth involved? What is your idea for why you want these youth to get engaged? The number one answer I hear when I ask that question is, our chapter is old, we're all dying. There's only so many of us left and we need new leaders. I'm tired, I've been doing this for 25 years, I want to spend more time with my children or my grandchildren, I don't have time to do this anymore, I feel like I'm stuck, so we need a new leader to take over for me. And that's why I want to get youth involved. And the first thing I say to them is, no. That's not why we want to get youth involved. Do we want future leaders? Absolutely. That's the greatest thing we're doing, is developing future leaders. But if we go in with this mindset that we're building future leaders for our chapter, for our church, we're just going to be disappointed. I looked up some statistics to kind of, confirm what I kind of already knew, just my own friends and my own experiences. 97% or 91%, I think it was 91% of young adults, millennials, expect to stay at a job less than 3 years. We move around a lot. Job hopping is what we do. This is still my first job, and I've only been here a year and a half, so I think we're still good. But I have friends that have been graduated for 2 years, and they're already on their second job. Not because they got fired, not because they had bad experience, but because they just wanted to do something different, or there was a better opportunity that came up. Job hopping is rampant in millennials and young adults. So if you're developing this leader, getting them involved with the thought that they're going to take over for you, it's probably not going to happen. They're probably going to be gone in a year or 2 years. It's the same way with students. A high schooler, at most, you're going to get 4 years. A college student, 4 years, maybe 5, maybe 6, depending on how long it takes them to finish or if they go to graduate school. But you have a finite amount of time with them. And so the chances that they're going to be the next leader of your society for more, or your chapter or your life team or whatever it is, for more than a couple years is really low. And even more than that, it's very doubtful that they're going to come back to that hometown. That's not happening as much as it used to be, where people would go to school and then come back, raise their family in their hometown. That doesn't happen as much as it used to, just because of the job market and the way we have a more global and broad nationwide economy. People don't stay in the same place for very long. And so I feel like we're setting ourselves up for failure if that's our goal. If that's the goal we're trying to reach, and we don't reach that goal, we don't see the fruit of that labor, and you know, if that's God's will and our chapter no longer exists anymore, we're going to feel like failures, when you're not failures at all. This is not me saying don't do this. This is me encouraging you that do this. Yes, do this, because you're developing leaders for someone else, and that's a good thing. You're developing leaders that are going to go out all across the country to places that maybe have never heard of Lutherans for Life before, or places in the country that are so overwhelmed by death that they've never heard this message of life before. And we have the ability to train these students and these young people now in how to share this message without necessarily ever seeing the fruits of that labor. I was actually just talking to someone from the reporter about sidewalk counseling, and one of the first questions she asked me when I told her I was a sidewalk counselor was, well, do you have any saves? And I said, no, I don't have any saves. I've been counseling for 5 years. I've had some close conversations where I thought maybe this was a possibility, but I don't know of any babies that I've saved. Not just sidewalk counseling, ever. I have not a single story in, oh goodness, 7 years of pro-life activities where I can say I saved that kid. That baby's there because of me. I don't know. But does that mean I'm not achieving something because I haven't seen the fruits of those labors? Not at all. I know that somewhere someone has been affected by what I've done, that someday I'm going to be in heaven and there's going to be someone there because of something I said, because of something God said through me. I'm going to get emotional just thinking about that. That's why I do what I do, and that's why we engage youth, so that they can affect that life that we can't reach. Whether we're old or young, whether we're going to stay in where we're at for the rest of our lives, we have a limited reach, but they have an unlimited reach. They're going to go everywhere. They're going to do great things. They're going to meet people and talk to people, and they're going to take the message we've taught them with them. Through service, through relationships, through mentoring. They're going to take that message, and they're going to change the world. The saying of Students for Life of America, they've been pushing it for a long time, is we are the pro-life generation. And I think that's true. All the numbers, all the trends have shown that this generation is more pro-life than the generation before it, and that those trends are starting to change, that students are realizing maybe it's through more knowledge, maybe it's through the fact that everyone posts their ultrasound pictures on Facebook. People are starting to realize there's something wrong with what we've been doing, and they want to change it. They're excited to change it. Just from a philanthropic, nonprofit background, we studied trends in youth giving so much, and they don't give big gifts. They're not that big foundation donor that's going to give $20,000, but they're going to give $5 here, $10 there to something they care about, but it adds up. And so we can encourage them. It doesn't matter how big your gift is, like the widow's mite. It doesn't matter how big, how much time you can give. There's something you can do, and there are lives that you can affect wherever you go. So that's my encouragement to you today. Take this knowledge, take this wisdom that you've gained in all of your activities, take these opportunities that God's give you to shape these young people. And while you may never see what comes of that, God sees what comes of that. And eventually our world will see the fruits of your labor. So thank you very much. How much time do we have?
We have about 15 minutes
very
until
good.
Our break. Does anybody have any questions for Laura related to?
It's 12 o'clock.
Do you go to yes. other churches where the youth group?
Yes.
We're very close to you.
Okay. Very good.
John's
oh, it's my it's that's my church.
How do we contact you?
My information is on the Lutherans for Life website. My phone number and my email. Email is really easy. ldavis@lutheransforlife.org. Send me an email. Give me a call, and we can definitely set something up.
Thank you.
Yes.
As you work with the young people, do you know notice any differences between the young men and the young women in terms of their attitudes or their identities or their aspirations to become involved?
Yes. It's harder to get guys involved. It's possible, but it is more difficult. I've gone to DC twice and we've had 3 or 4 guys each time. I think this time we have 2 or 3 and one of them is my brother. So it's relational. Absolutely. It's interesting to point out our servant event was 3 girls and 3 guys, which I was really excited about because I was afraid it's going to be a bunch of girls and we're going to be all hormonal together. But we had 3 guys, just as many guys. And one of them was the son of one of our volunteers, Claire Hermanis, who's amazing in so many ways. Her son came because Claire told him to come and he had a great time and she says he still talks about it. Nathan was at one of the Bible studies I went and talked to and he came and I hear he still talks about it and he was one of our peer reviewers for this online training course that we're going to announce today, I think. And then the last boy, he was at a member at Renee's church, Renee Gibbs's church, and he came with two other girls from their church. And he came because his girlfriend was going, and he wanted to go with his girlfriend. And you know what? I'm okay with that. Whatever it takes to get them there. So, yeah, it is more difficult to get guys involved because I think they've been trained that it's a woman's issue. And so it's kind of breaking down that stereotype. When I talk to students, I always emphasize this is not a woman's issue. This is not a social issue or a political issue. This is a human issue. This is a spiritual issue. And whether we're male or female, this matters to us because this is humanity and this is what's happening to all of society. So, you're welcome. Yes?
What kind of training or equipping do you do if you use to be able to engage people at the rescue?
Absolutely. I love to use an adaptation of the Making Abortion Unthinkable program. That's what we did with the students yesterday during the pre-conference workshop. I kind of condensed it a little bit because the full program is 4 or 5 hours long, and usually people split it into several sessions or they do it across a whole day. I don't usually have that much time. If I go into an ethics course at a Lutheran high school, I have 45 minutes or 50 minutes. So it's condensed a little bit, but it gets the main points across to them and teaches them that you can introduce life issues without talking about God, but it gives you an opportunity to have that conversation later. So many people have this idea that we're just a bunch of Bible thumpers. That's all we talk about. That's the only reason we have for what we say. And that's a wonderful reason for what we say. The Bible says so. I trust the Bible. It's God's word, unapologetically. But in our secular world, if we start with the Bible, if that's the first thing we say, the gears shut off immediately. I went to a public university. I went to a public high school. I saw that. I had to come up with something else. And then once you introduce that idea that I'm a rational human being who can take evidence and make a conclusion out of it, then when you say, and the Bible says this and I believe it, they understand that I didn't come to that conclusion just because I'm some crazy person, but because I have a rational reason for why I came to that, and because I have faith, and faith is an objective, rational thing. And so it opens up even broader conversations once that relationship and mutual respect has developed. So that's the program I use with them because that had a great influence on my life, and I'm willing to do that anywhere. I've done it different Concordia campuses, different campus ministries, UCLA and A&M, and different high schools, things like that. So be more than happy to share that with students. Yes?
Or when you go and visit with different groups of students, is your ultimate goal to establish some kind of a group, formal group, in that location that they would be attached? You mentioned before a Lutherans for Life chapter, but my understanding is Lutherans for Life isn't even encouraging chapters anymore. They're encouraging having a life advocate in every congregation. So what is the concrete, tangible entity that you're talking
right
about other than just youth generally?
My goal is not to create a bunch of little LFLers. If that happens, that's fabulous, and I would love that and support that. Usually when I talk to a school, I connect, and if they're interested in getting a student group started, I usually connect them to Students for Life of America and stay as kind of an ongoing spiritual support for them, to connect them with LFL issues and things that we have coming out and resources for them that they can use. But Students for Life is experts on student groups. They do a wonderful job. And a student group is much, much different than a church group. You have to run it differently. There's different hoops you have to go through. And so there's a lot more challenges. And Students for Life has lawyers and experts on getting student groups supported on campuses. So it's kind of a partnership. I work with both. We would like to have Lutheran groups on each of the Concordia campuses. That's a new goal for next year, something we're working on. There are currently two. There are 10 campuses. I feel like 8 is an attainable goal. Then we've got Valpo and Pacific Lutheran and however many other Lutheran universities out there. And my end-all, be-all goal would be to have a group on every campus because campus groups make a difference. But I'm not going to go in and say, this is how you have to do it. Because once again, every group is different. Everyone has a different way of reaching their community. And I'm there to encourage them in what works in their area, whatever that looks like, whether that's a life team, whether that's a student group, whether that's something like Teens for Life that they have. That's what I'm there to do.
We have a Students for Life group we just established at our church for our 9th through 12th grade youth group. We would like to be connected. We don't want to waste our time going to the National Youth Gathering for a big pep rally. We want our kids to go and do something tangible, productive, engaging, edifying, concrete, and all those other terms. And it would be more beneficial, we would think, for our kids to be connected to other small groups like that in congregations around the nation. So in your position, if you are connecting and gathering and establishing, helping to establish a group, no matter what they call it, it would be edifying for us, beneficial, if you would have a database and
yes.
You have all of those
other We're working groups, on it.
And instead of going to a national gathering for something else, we'll all get together every year and develop that Youth for Life thing
yes.
and make it a thing rather than an idea.
I would love that. So we're. This is also something that's all on the radar, but it takes time to do something like that. I don't know how many groups are across campuses. I tried to do a survey and find out if they had a life ministry or not. I think we got like 10% feedback on that, going to every campus ministry and Lutheran high school in the country on the rosters. So we're trying. It's challenging. So we're kind of starting with one group and then moving. So we're going to start with our Concordia campuses, then I'll focus on Lutheran high schools and try to build it from there. So this last year has all been, for me, there was no program a year and a half ago. This year has been for trying different things, evaluating, seeing how it works, seeing what doesn't work, and doing better next year. So we just had finished our first season of pilots, I guess. Servant Event was a pilot program. We just did a church worker training program at Concordia, Wisconsin to introduce life issues to students going into seminary or lay ministry or DCE, things like that. And that went really well. And so now we're looking at how are we going to expand that next year. So it's definitely on our radar, something we want to do. I am one person. So we're working to see how we can make this a feasible option for a nationwide program with limited resources. So. I don't know if that answers your question at all.
Definitely.
Okay.
And the Students for Life, just so everybody knows, the Students for Life is not a membership program. It's an information program. You don't have to pay a dollar to be a part of Students for Life.
Right.
And it's an information-based program. So they will give you information. They will send their people. They have
to train you.
For training and so on. And it's all free.
Right.
So you tomorrow, if you have one student in your congregation that's interested and willing or whatever, you can take your LYF tomorrow and turn it into a LYF for life or whatever, and that thing can become overnight.
Right. And they do a wonderful job. They're technically secular. They don't hold a particular religious belief, but pretty much the entire staff is Protestant. I believe there's a couple Catholics, that's not their focus. They're very activist based, which is some of my reservations. Not that we can't be activists, but I think they focus a little too much on activism and not enough on sharing the gospel. So my job is to, okay, if you're having problems with your administration, getting funding, getting approved, they can get you in touch with the people that will help you with that. That's not something I can do. But if you want to know how to share the gospel on your campus, if you want to know what resources are available to connect life issues with the Word of God, I can help with that. So it's a partnership. And I think that's good. I think that's something that the pro-life movement really excels at, is working together for a common goal and using each other's strengths. Anyone else?
Well, thank you.
Thank you.